Okay, let's see if we could try to finish up some of the things we were talking about in terms of Shemitah in the last several weeks. It's hard to say we're going to finish off all of the Shemitah in 20 minutes, but we'll see if we could try to do as best as we can. So we left off last week with a little bit of a quandary in terms of how do we navigate the issues in Shemitah. In terms of, on the one hand, there is an approach out there, we spoke a little bit about it in the previous weeks, previous shiurim, called Het HaMechira, that relies on a basic kula, basic fundamental kula, that Shemitah is only the Rabbanim Bezman Hazeh, and therefore any land that belongs to a Goyim is not really subject to the halachas of Shemitah, and for some reason it's permissible to sell off Eretz Yisrael to the Goyim. Again, each one of those steps is controversial. So there are many, many people who do not want to go down that route. Many people in Eretz Yisrael today do not want to go down that route. And the question is, what other options are available for them? So we spoke about some of the practical, almost, so to speak, easy solutions, in the sense of if one gets either Peres Chutz La'aretz, that would be theoretically a good halachic solution, or even if one gets Peres from Eretz Yisrael, but one gets Peres from Eretz Yisrael from fields that belong to literally to non-Jews, not to Het HaMechira, but literally to a non-Jewish field. So we said that would solve some of the issues in Shemitah, not necessarily all the issues in Shemitah. So we said that would solve a Svichin issue, the Issa Derabbanan of eating vegetables and grains that grow on their own or planted by others, that would be okay in the status of Akum, that's a Rambam. But that wouldn't necessarily circumvent all of the halachas of Shemitah. We mentioned the major machlokes, which is already been running machlokes for hundreds and hundreds of years in Klal Yisrael, machlokes in the Beis Yosef, and the Mabit, about whether peiros of a real field of a goy still retain kedusha shvius. According to the Beis Yosef, so they don't have kedusha shvius anymore. And all the halachas that we spoke about in the past of the Yachal of Lehefsed and all the halachas that govern Bior and Hefker, all the above, would not apply to them. And according to the Mabit, it would. And we said that Arayam is that. This is still a machlokes. The machlokes between the Rabbanim in Yerushalayim and the Chazanish and the Bnei Brach. This has been, again, a running machlokes for hundreds and hundreds of years. So that is an option. We also mentioned last week that option, although from an absolutely pure Hilchos Shemitah perspective, may be not a bad option. There are other issues involved in that mahalach, and especially since the fields of the non-Jews who we're talking about getting payers from are not necessarily people who we are so thrilled about to be supporting their endeavors. We'll leave it very, very vague in terms of that. And therefore, we many, many people try to shy away from that model. The question is, what models are left? If the Peres Chutz La'aretz doesn't always work entirely, and Peres of non-Jews in Eretz Yisrael we're not thrilled with, and Het HaMechira we're trying to avoid, so what other potential options are available to make life a little bit more bearable? So we just barely began to discuss at the very end of last week's shiur one fairly new option that has been entered onto the table, and that is based on a Yerushalmi, as we continue our tradition from yesterday of a Yerushalmi. Not that we finish all the Bavlis, but we go in Shemitah, yeah, I don't have to apologize, it's all Yerushalmis. So there's one cryptic line in the Yerushalmi that raises the following shaila. The Yerushalmi says, that it says in the Torah in Parshas Bahar, Sodcha L'Sizra, what about a person who's a Rebbe Sochabayis, if a person plants inside a house, so would that be subject to Din Mishmita or not? So the Rishami leaves that talking. We're not sure what the answer to that question is. So there was a major machlekes, I suppose, that we alluded to at the end of the shiur last week. What conclusion should we draw? Therefore what? So the Pa'as HaShulchan, the Talmud of the Gaon Gaon, was of the opinion that since Shemitah Bezman Hazeh is only the Rabbanon for a variety of reasons, and everyone agrees to that, but according to many Rishonim, it would only be the Rabbanon Bezman Hazeh. So therefore we can apply the rule of Safek Tavah V'Kula and call it a day. Therefore, all Zriyas that are done B'soch HaBayis would just be Mufka Legami for the Din of Shemitah. And the Chazanish taught that wasn't correct, that since the Shaila is not a Derabbanan Tikka Shaila, it's a Deraisa Tikka Shaila that happens to play out B'zman HaZeh Legami Shemitah Derabbanan, that is not looked at through the eyes of Sveika Derabbanan Kula, that is viewed through the prism of Sveika Deraisa L'chumra, and therefore we would have to be Machmir B'zman HaZeh. So that was an important question. The question is, any relevance in this? I mean, it's a cute child. It's interesting, fascinating. Rishami, what does this mean for us? So there was a suggestion that was made that maybe we can do a lot of planting. Not everything, but we can do a lot of planting in a bias. And according to the Mekilim, maybe we wouldn't be so bad off. So thus came the birth of the greenhouse. Not the greenhouse effect, but the greenhouse akula of trying to plant in greenhouses to call that a bias. So this was a big machlekes aposkim. Does this even meet the criteria of the Suffolk and the Rishonim, we're not even sure. Forget about how we posited the Suffolk Rishonim. We're not even sure this is what the Rishonim was talking about. I can tell you one thing for sure, the Rishonim was not talking about greenhouses. That was for sure not. The Rishonim was talking about in the middle of your living room, you wanna grow a garden in the middle of your living room. So the question that some poskim raised was, why should we say sorcha v'lo bayis? What's the nature of that halacha, if it even exists? Again, according to one side, Rishami, it doesn't even exist. But according to the Tzad of the Mekilim, if you're going down the route of the Pasa Shulchan, that maybe there are no pun intended grounds to be mekil on Zriya Shiva Bayis. What do the words mean, Zriya Shiva Bayis? So either one can take it literally, Zriya Shiva Bayis. This is the house. So it's the house. It's got four walls. It's got a top to it. It's a house. And whether the greenhouse has mezuzah or not, we'll figure out that when we figure out other things about mezuzah. But that was just a wave. It wasn't an attack. It was just a wave. So the no personal, full friends. Okay. So the Azriya Shiva bias, if you have a greenhouse, so it's a bias. It's got four walls. It's got a ceiling. It's a house. So if you believe that Azriya Shiva bias is not called Azriya Shiva Soda, so that would be permissible according to the Mekilah. So other poskim said no. Other poskim said, wait a second. So what do you mean Zriya Shiva? What kind of strange halacha that Zriya Shiva bias? So Zriya Shiva bias really means is it's something that's called Shaloi Kederach. It's like a bizarre meshugna. What kind of crazy guy meshugna back in 2,000 years ago would go ahead and plant, he's planting carrots in his living room. So his wife's going to throw him out of the house. That's why he's planting carrots in the living room. So that's called the Zriya Shiva bias. So something is done in such a bizarre way, maybe that's mufka from the dinner of Shemitah, or maybe not. That's exactly the suffix. If that's the case, so this is the idea that we find in other areas of halacha as well. Whenever we have something that is excluded in halacha because of simply shelo kederech concerns, shelo kederech changes according to the time and place. If we're dealing with something which is exeris hakosov and it's an objective halacha, and this is not called shmita, finish, end of discussion, not because it's bizarre and strange, but because simply shmita doesn't speak to inside houses, so that inside houses doesn't change according to the time and place. But if the nature of that halacha is based on shelo kederech, Shalom Kederach will change according to whatever the culture is. We've spoken about this in Hilchos Shabbos purposes. A very, very famous example of this in terms of the Mishnah, Masechet Shabbos, in the third parak that speaks about Bishul Bechama. And the Gemara says if you're cooking the sun on Shabbos, that's not called Bishul Min HaTorah. So why is that? So there was a big machlokes opposed between Reb Moshe and Reb Shlomo Zalman, what the Ptur was. So Reb Moshe was of the opinion that that's like Shalom Kederach. It's not normal. How much sugar cooks in the sun? And the Ephraim Moshe said, but what if it becomes normal to cook in the sun? You live in a place with solar heating, or we spoke about microwaves, which is like the sun in the sense of there are rays, but it's not a flame. So is that considered to be normal? So Moshe writes that whenever it's normal in that locality, so then that becomes Bishul Derais. It's not a halacha that you need a fire, you need a flame for Bishul. It just has to be Derech Bishul. The Torah only speaks to normal scenarios. So normalcy changes from time to place. Shlomo Zalman disagreed with Ramosha in that Sugya Bishul Bechama and said, no, Bishul Bechama is a Ptur. It means the Torah only recognizes Bishul Be'esh. Bishul Bechama is Nishkei Bishul. And it doesn't matter what country you live in, what year you live in, what culture you live in, Bishul without a flame is just not the Bishul HaKosu B'Torah, not because it's Shalom Kederach, and therefore it will not change at all. So that similar machloikis existed in the Dalia Poskim when it came to Zuriya Bebayis, which again, according to only one side of the Sham even means anything, Zuriya Bebayis, assuming that it's Potter, is it Potter because it's just objectively, but this is not the Tzura of Shemitah HaKosu B'Torah? What do I say? No, because this is Meshurdik, this is strange. And this was a big machloikis Poskim. The type of Shlomo Zalman was the maker of this one also. Shlomo Zalman was of the opinion that it's not called. Kach Kozra Torah, that's it. Shmita Zachayk was only given in Sadas, not in Batim. And Rabbi Yashiv was of the opinion that, no, that the whole din is Rishav Abayas. Again, we're not even sure it exists, but even it exists, only exists in a Meshurdik way. Once you start building these billion-dollar greenhouses and you create a whole culture called plant-giving greenhouses, and then you just undid the kula. So the more you put into the kula, the less effective the kula becomes, according to the Machmir. So that was child number one. So we already have two things, and we're not so thrilled with this whole greenhouse story. We're not even sure that the whole thing is true in the first place, and even if it was true, we're not sure that our modern-day application is correct. So there was a third fact that was thrown into the greenhouse to try to make things a little bit better. And that was also suggested that appears in the Chazdish himself, the one who was not the biggest fan of the Chazdish wasn't even talking about greenhouses yet. The one in the greenhouses back in the 1940s. He was talking about the lumbus of the Rishabik. So the Chazdish throws in a curveball to the Sugya. The Chazdish said, why was I so machmer against this Zriya Shiva Bayis? because it was a shaila of a deraisa. Now again, not that Shemitah per se is about a deraisa, says the Chazanish, we don't really follow that view, but since Be'ikaron, there's a deraisa, maybe Ban HaMikdash, there's a deraisa here, so therefore it's considered to be through the prism of a deraisa, then something deraisa in the Chumra. Says the Chazanish, what if the planting that I would do inside the bayis would only be a derabbanandika kind of planting in the first place? Kind of derabundic complaining in the first place. So it is a famous story. So the sugyas of otzitz. Otzitz noklovs and otzitz she'enu noklovs. So there are sugyas about this in Maseches Gittin and Maseches Brachas, other places, about the principle of a flower pot. Let's say I have a pot and have some soil in the pot and I'm growing things, seeds growing in that pot. So is that called growing min haTorah? Is that considered to be mechubal karka min haTorah? I have a flower pot sitting on top of the ground. It's not mamish built. It's not connected to the ground. Is anything growing in that flower pot considered to be mechubal karka, growing in the ground or not? So the Mishnayos tell us in a few places that there's a difference based on the following: is it what's called an otzitz nokov, or is it called otzitz she'enu nokov? Is there a hole in the bottom of the flower pot or not? So if there's a hole in the bottom of the flower pot, then we assume that there's a chibur, there's a tziruf between the ground and it was growing inside the flower pot. Now, how that works, is that a botanical statement? Is that a halachic spiritual statement? I cannot tell you. I said, I've quoted in the past that when the Sefer Korban Eida wrote a Perush on the Rishali, he was a Rav in Berlin, I think about the 1700s or so. So he started to write a Perush on the Rishali, and he came to the realization that he didn't know too much about agriculture, about botany. So what did he do? So he enrolled in a course in botany in the University of Berlin. So it's the first Torah Matzah class. So he was an old 80-year-old Rav sitting in, I'm not sure who else was in the course in Berlin in the 1700s. So okay, you got to write a Perushim Rishon, you got to know a little bit about the botany, so I don't know too much about it. So this stuff that's growing inside the flower pot, so whether in the world of agriculture, the world of halacha, the mice, the min haTorah, it's considered to be mechubah. That's the whole sugya of Masechah Shabbos, about if a person plucks something out of the otzitz nachov on Shabbos, maybe a shalv koitzim deraisa. So we treat otzitz nachovs as being mechubah lekarka, kol din haTorah. However, an otzitz she'eino nachov is not considered to be like karka. If there's no hole in the bottom of the flower pot, so I'm simply planting in a flower pot, so it's not mechubah, it's no connection to the ground. That's true on a love of deraisa, but a love of the rabbanan, that is considered to be mechubah. That's what the Gemara says in a few places, that if you have something that's growing in an otzitz nokov, so then it's chayv and shumas as ma'isus min haTorah. If you have something that's growing in an otzitz she'eino nokov, then it's only chayv and shumas as ma'isus min derabbanan. Because min haTorah, it's considered to be not really part of the karka per se. So although it's interesting that vis-a-vis Shemitah, the Gemara, the Yerushalmi never talks about otzitz nokov, otzitz she'eino nokov, legabe Shemitah. The Chazanish says he thinks it should be the same thing. Whatever the din is, legabe Shemitah and Maisa should probably carry over to Shemitah. And therefore, the Chazanish suggests that if you have a flower pot that's not nokov, so then it can only be a problem of the Rabbanans. The worst scenario that a Shemitah could be could only be the Rabbanans. The Chazanish says, what he's willing to say is as follows. If you want to plant mamish in your living room, in the soil, in the dirt of your living room, so that I'm not willing to be megalot. That's a sofik and Yerushalmi, an unresolved sofik and Yerushalmi, and Shemitah has to be looked at through the eyes of deraisa, but it's not really deraisa. But, says the Chazdish, if you want to plant in an otzit she'eino nokov in your living room, that efshalachov, maybe you can be megal on an otzit she'eino nokov. It's only derabbanan, it's a super duper derabbanan. It's a derabbanan, even bezman shebesimin shakayim would be a derabbanan. And therefore, b'chiyagavna, if it's already in a bias, and a bias, the suffix of Yerushalmi, maybe Epshel Hakel. So the question is, okay, so that doesn't sound like such a grandiose kula. So some people decided to make a lot of money for that kula. So he said, okay, we're going to plant in otzitz, she'eino nokov, in greenhouses. Now again, that's assuming that greenhouses are batim. If you hold like Rabbi Yashiv that the greenhouse is not a bias because it's too common, then the game's over. So assuming, like those who are making that the greenhouse is called Rabbi Yashiv a bias, we're going to start a multi-billion-dollar industry called planting inside flower pots without holes. You could just imagine, how much you can grow inside a flower pot without a hole, unless you make these humongous structures that are the halakha equivalents of flower pots without holes, and so be it. And so in the greenhouse industry, that's basically what they have. They have a lot of stuff growing in these humongous matzamnutaks, they call them. They're detached, they're not on the ground. There's no hole on the bottom. And the stuff is positioned in such a way that there's no chibur at all between anything going on the ground and the stuff that's growing in these things. So these things are a massive application of an efshar in the Chazon Ish. They turned a billion-dollar industry out of an efshar in the Chazon Ish that it could be, it could be mechon. Now again, there would start lakan, lakan. According to the Pasuk Shulchan, you could do mamish zriya in the soil of a greenhouse. You don't need any of this stuff. According to Rabbi Yashiv, none of this stuff works anyway because the greenhouses are not even batim. They're just a grandiose field because it's dark of a kach. But if you walk that tightrope, you walk that middle ground, if you're willing to treat the greenhouses like ground, like houses, and you don't want to be making it outright, but you want to be making with siruf, the otzet shenonokos, so that has given and whole oomph to this industry today. So, have you seen any of this stuff? Anyway, so anyone ever see this stuff? No. Yeah, it exists. It almost exists.
What happened with the greenhouse where it's not connected? That it's not a pot, but it's completely disconnected from the ground. It doesn't grow on anything. Like, it's hydroponics.
Oh, so hydroponics is another story. Hydroponics is different. It's different. So we'll get to hydroponics in a second. So, where did you see the stuff, Duane? Do you remember where it was? No, I'm saying where you saw Nesterot or something. They have a lot of this stuff down closer to Nesterot. They have a lot of this stuff. I don't know, the original.
Definitely, to your right, it was down in Nesterot because I was going back at the Oz at the time and I remember we stopped and we were looking at these big greenhouses.
Yeah. So the original greenhouse was actually built in Oz. Unfortunately, tragically, when Aza was dismantled, so they took some of the greenhouses they were able to replant in other parts of Eretz Yisrael. Unfortunately, some of the stuff that was left behind was destroyed. Nobody on the other side of the border was smart enough to realize that this was a $1 billion shmita industry for many other reasons. Anyway, and then a strange thing happened is that some companies realized that, hey, wait, we can export this technology of greenhouses to other countries as well. And thus, if you take a look at some of the very, very firm-looking vegetables that you may be growing, and thinking that you're supporting the economy of Eretz Yisrael, if you look in the small print, it says in the back, products of Guatemala or Peru or some other South American countries, and there you can be making an otzet shenonoko, even that's the shasat chag level. So you've noticed that's a little bit misleading when you get this really, really, you know, you really feel you're supporting the Israeli economy by supporting Peru. So look a little more carefully at the stuff you're buying. But anyway, bottom line is, but the stuff was actually started in Oz. That was the original. The original stuff was the Gush Katif stuff many moons ago. Okay. Anyway, back to that story. Yes, and we'll start to sell the otzitzes to the goyim. Maybe, I don't know. Okay, maybe. So this whole approach, again, is not going to solve the world's problems. This is solves one dimension. Not everything can grow in these kind of conditions. You can't plant, the best thing, you can't plant orange trees in these, whatever. Certain things you're just not going to grow in these contraptions. But this is helpful. This is something that could add a little bit of boosting the Israeli economy and helping out the farmers, and on the other hand, circumventing many of the details in terms of Shemitah. But again, not everyone agreed to it. We presented the pros and cons in terms of this whole Matzah Menutak combined together with the greenhouses. So there is another institution that also is practiced, very, very common in Israel today. It actually has its throwback to the days of the Tanoim already, and that's the notion what's called an Otzah Beis Din. So as we mentioned in the past, that when it comes to Shemitah, we really have to draw a distinction between the Avodas HaKarka, the things that we want to literally plant. So it's very, very hard to do that, unless you're going to go down this greenhouse, to go literally to plant in the land. That's something that's obviously Sachal of Sizra. But there are a lot of things that we don't have to plant. Loads and loads of stuff, the fruits that are growing. So can we come up with some kind of a solution to not permit Avodas HaKarka, but to have a functioning system that works in today's world, to at least have the fruits accessible to everybody. The fruits that are growing, that were planted 20 years ago, they're growing the head there. So can we do that? So we mentioned already in last week, 2 weeks ago, that the whole array of different halachas that govern even the fruit, even though you're not actually planting, we have to treat the fruit with kedusha. So number one, it's not allowed to be guarded. Number two, you're not allowed to do business with it. And if you do business with it, so that becomes a whole other problem called Dmei Shvius, that any buying and selling that takes place with the fruit, so then that Kedusha Shvius transfers onto the money, and then that money in turn, when it's used to buy something else, is also going to become Kaddish Kedusha Shvius. Then the money loses Kedusha, and the new thing becomes Kaddish. So this is going to start to become big problems, and you're not allowed to do it. Bottom line is, you're not allowed to do business. You're not allowed to do it. So is there any way to deal with anbas, yeah, fruits, that doesn't really require too much avodas karka? And the little bits of avodas karka that are necessary to keep the trees going are probably okay anyway. Those are sugyas in the beginning of the sentence by Katan, that you're allowed to do certain things during the Shnasa Shmita to prevent the trees from actually from dying. So what ways could we come up with to avoid, particularly this Isser Schora? So there is an Eitzah that was already given in the days of the Tanoim, what's called an Eitzah Beis Din. So an Eitzah Beis Din basically means that the Beis Din takes over the fields, which is basically what's supposed to be happening anyway, because the fields are supposed to be Hefka for Klal Yisrael. So the Beis Din are representing the Jewish community, and they're taking over the fields, and they're going to make sure of a few things. Number one, they're going to make sure you're going to have a Beis Din in control of each field saying that, listen, none of the Malachas HaSuras are going to happen. We're just going to make sure that the farmers are doing what the Halacha permits them to do during Shasa Shmita. But what we're also going to do is as follows. We're going to provide a venue for anybody to get the fruit. But in theory, you know, if you live in an old-style world, so everyone just leave your fields open and let everyone just come trampling in, but it's not so practical because the guy's got a field down in the, guy's growing oranges up in the Galil somewhere. So how's the guy from Yerushalayim going to go get it? So it's just not practical. So it's in everybody's best interest to do as follows. Let's figure out a way to get those fruits transported from the Galil down to Yerushalayim. Now, wait a second. So someone's going to transport fruit for you? Someone's got to get paid for that job. I'm not saying getting paid for the fruit. The fruit is hefker. I have a right. I'm a Yerushalmi. I live in Meisharim. I have a right to go up to the Galil and walk in and take as many oranges as I want. But I don't want to do that. It's a pain in the neck to do that. So what we do is we make life a little bit easier for you. We have people who collect the oranges. Listen, you're Yerushalmi, Meisharim. You don't know too much about collecting oranges. So we'll have somebody to collect the oranges for you. We'll put the oranges into a crate for you. We'll put them onto a truck. We'll bring it to your makolot in Meisharim. And gavaldik, you'll have a wonderful orange. It's a win-win situation. Wait a second. Someone's got to get paid. So you're right. The truck driver's going to get paid, and the orange collector's going to get paid, and the guy puts it into the crates. Yeah, everyone's going to get paid. The one thing you're not paying for, you're not paying for the fruit. Because they don't pay for the fruit. It's hefker. I'm Yushamek. I'll take the fruit whenever I want. So no one's getting paid. And forget, we don't want anyone to get paid for the fruit. Because if the fruit gets paid for, then that money's going to have kedusha shviyas to it. It's going to be a violation of the achav al-schora. It's a violation of the dinim of hefker. And it's going to cause problem down the line. But what we can do is set up an entire system that people get paid for all the labor, for all the service to enable you to get that fruit. So the Tanaim already thought up with this idea. This is a little bit of circumventing, but the idea makes a lot of sense that we're paying you for the work rather than for the fruit itself. So with that background that you're getting paid for the work and not for the fruit itself, Beis Din's running a business now. Beis Din has to hire workers. So who do you think the Beis Din should hire? Beis Din's got access to thousands and thousands of oranges, and they're growing on the trees, and our goal is to get these oranges to the makolot in Meisharim. Who are they going to hire? So you think they're going to hire some yeshiva guy who doesn't know anything about oranges? I got a great person to hire, a guy who knows a lot about how to cut off oranges without destroying the tree. I got a guy who knows exactly how to pack up oranges properly. And guess what? He's out of work this year. You know why? Because he's a farmer during Shmita. He's got nothing to do. So this is a business venture. I got a job that I need to get done, and I got a guy who happens to have the perfect skills to do the job. So Beis Din becomes a shadchan. That's exactly what they do. So you know what? Let's pay for these farmers. We'll give them a job. We'll pay them for all the work. Not for the oranges, because it's hefker. It's Beis Din. Can't pay for oranges. We're gonna pay them for all their work. Who's going to pick up the cost? Like any other, this is a business model. This is a sisim. There's nothing to do with halacha. Who picks up the cost? The consumer, the guy who benefits down the line. Who benefits? The guy who's got to buy the orange in Meisharim in next week. So he's going to pay to the Beis Din's the middleman. He's going to pay the Eitzah Beis Din. The Eitzah Beis Din is going to pay off the workers, and everybody's happy. He's got his oranges. The Beis Din, no one's violating the halachas, and the farmers are happy. They're getting paid to do something to work a little bit. So that's the model of an Eitzah Beis Din. Now, what's supposed to happen in Eitzah Beis Din, a few things should be taking place. Number one, this is all assuming that no malachas hasuras are taking place. So Beis Din's supposed to be in charge of that, to supervise, to teach the farmer. Not all the farmers are the greatest of Menachem Chachamim. So the farmers have to be instructed and to be taught and have to be guided and have to be supervised during the course of the year to make sure that they're following the rules, that nothing is being done by Isser. And in addition, what's supposed to happen is the prices should reflect the fact that it should be lower. Because if I'm not really paying for the oranges, I'm paying for all the labor, so for Shteitzach, the price of the oranges should be cheaper. I say that again, the price should be cheaper. That is what's supposed to happen in a perfect notzavayz in the system. I cannot, I'm not holding Eretz Yisrael, I can't tell you exactly what's happening, but that is theoretically what's supposed to happen. So you have a lot of these kinds of notzavayz that are set up. So very often you can go into places in Eretz Yisrael and you have special setups. Come and buy your notzavayz in wine. Come and buy your notzavayz in oranges. Come and buy your notzavayz in apples. So if they're done properly, they're set up by a responsible notzavayz, this is a great, phenomenal idea. This could help everybody, help support the farmers. However, this doesn't mean that the fruit doesn't have kedushas shviyus to it. The fruit does have kedushas shviyus to it, and therefore the achal hefsed and all the other halachas would apply to it. Shas habiur is a little bit tricky in terms of notzavayz din. So kol zman that the fruit is in the under the domain of the beis din, so then it's basically in a state of hefker because nobody really owns it. Lemaisa, I can walk into Eretz Beis Din and take it. I mean, in theory, that's what a perfect Eretz Beis Din is. Nobody really owns it. So then, if it is in the state of the Eretz Beis Din when the Shas HaBir arrives, then it's kemavur. It's as if bir already took place. But that doesn't always happen. So very often, you end up buying it, not buying it, but getting it in hefker and paying for the services. You sometimes get that before the Shas HaBir comes. So then, Shas HaBir will speak to you. That's why we have a lot of these wine issues with some of these bottles of wine make their way to America, which is, according to many, really shouldn't be happening. The Mishnah in Shviyah speaks about, in general, Perish Shviyah is not really supposed to be exported to Chutz La'aretz. It's a whole another issue. But sometimes it happens. Bein behet to bein be'iser. So you can theoretically go to the store today, well, not yet this Shviyah. Any Shviyah wine you're getting is still less Shviyah's wine, but you can go in a few months from now and theoretically get a bottle of wine that's going to be Otzer Beis Din wine. So that Otzer Beis Din wine means that it's permissible to partake of, but you have to be careful with it. You have to treat it because it's Shviyas, and you will have to do a beer on it if it wasn't under the auspices of the Beis Din at the time of the Shas HaBir. So this is another creative idea that is used a lot in Eretz Yisrael today. So again, you have a whole array of different ideas that join together. So you have those who are just straight ahead to Mechira and leave me alone and I don't really bother with any of this. That's one approach with that Mechira. You have the other approach that says we're not playing any games. Everything is going to be the payers of Chutz La'aretz, press Chutz La'aretz. We're not going to worry about anything. It's not always so practical to do that. And then you have those who throw in payers of Eretz Yisrael from fields of Goyim, which again, Svichin problems are solved because it's Shvius problems depending on what you think about the Chazanish and others. And then you have other ideas that have been suggested and been implemented to try to beef up the Israeli economy, try to help Achem B'nai Israel, the farmers, either through the ideas of the greenhouses combined with the yotzitzis, so that's one whole approach, and then that's good for certain things, it's not going to be so good for trees, but that's good for certain kind of planting things, and then you have the tree issue, the fruit issue, which can help a lot, the Otzer Beis Din, which can help a lot in terms of fruits. So you have an array of different options on the ground, and again, that's why you have so many different possibilities that are flying around there at Israel today.
Why do you have to go to figure out the wine's ownership during Shas HaBir? I mean, let's have buying a 10-year-old bottle of wine.
Yeah, I have no idea where that wine was. Yeah, I don't know. I can see some error. I mean, the Shas HaBir for wine is next year at Pesach, so by next year we'll figure it out. This year's wine, the grapes haven't even finished growing yet. I mean, maybe Karen Levin, the grapes got to be grown until they turn into wine, so worry about it next year. There is just almost like an overall question, just whatever, you know, when we look at all these shahs, all these sugyas, we're learning the sugyas of Shemitah the last 3-4 weeks, you know, what eyes do we look at the sugya through? So we started the sugya by saying that there was a machloikis, a big machloikis, and we showed him whether Shemitah b'zman hazeh is deraisa or derabanan. But even if you go down the approach that Shemitah is derabanan b'zman hazeh, there are still different sets of eyes. There are yesh v'yesh, or different kinds of derabanans. So certain dinim derabanan we look at through a very, very lenient set of eyes, and sfeika derabanan l'kulas, etc. And sometimes you have certain dinim derabanan that get looked at through a little bit more of a chumra dika set of eyes. So this is a question that the Beis Halevi raises when he talks about just how should we look at all the shav, the shmita issue. Should we look at it with a very, you know, kind of laid back, that, well, it's only derabanan anyway, that kind of attitude, we're not being mezalza on the derabanan, but there are chilukim how we pass kinshav as the raisa versus the derabanan. Or perhaps we should say that although Shemitah may very well be the Rabbanim Mizban Hazeh, it may have certain chumras to it that may up the ante a little bit and force us to be a little bit more machmer than on us to quote-unquote regular, low-level, so to speak, din the Rabbanim. So one of the factors that Beis Halevi discusses is as follows. That sometimes you have a din that's given to us by the Torah itself, the din deraisa, and the din really should apply. And there's really no reason why the din shouldn't apply. It's not a made-up din derabanan. It's a din deraisa, and there's kind of like a quirk. There's like there's one condition that's supposed to be present to kick this din deraisa off, and that condition happens to be missing. So the Beis HaLevi says, when you have a din like that, that's basically fundamentally a deraisa, a din, it's just missing a little bit of a nuance. Well, one piece of the puzzle is missing. So it says the Beis HaLevi, although you may not be technically mechuyev min haTorah to do that din, it does register as a mitzvah deraisa. It is considered to be a kiyum deraisa. If you go ahead and you do it anyway, so that's elevated to become almost like a deraisa tikka status. So says the Beis HaLevi, Shvita b'zman hazeh derabbanan. Why is it derabbanan? So there's basically two different approaches why it's derabbanan. One approach is because both the kedushas are arts. Because the kedusha of Eretz Yisrael for all agricultural mitzvahs was b'teila b'shas achorban, and therefore min haTorah, it's kayemus for other things, for other areas of halacha, but for agriculture, it's batel finish. So says the Beis HaLevi, if that's your approach towards Shvita b'zman hazeh derabbanan, because it's batel kedushas haaretz, so then the same way if I plant in Montana, I wouldn't consider that to be a kiyum of Shemitah. I'm planting my field in Kansas. You would say, oh, you're not really chayv in Kansas, but it's a gevaldik mitzvah. You want to plant in Kansas. It's a great kiyum. It's chayv mishleit zonos. So there's nothing, zero. Nothing's happening in Kansas. Except for the Wizard of Oz. Nothing's happening in Kansas. Nothing, there's no kiyum, zero kiyum whatsoever. So if you think that Eretz Yisrael b'zman hazeh, vis-a-vis agriculture, again, please don't take this out of context. Vis-a-vis agriculture, planting in Eretz Yisrael, min haTorah is like planting in Kansas. So then there's no kiyum at all, so there's nothing to be gained. It's a din derabbanan, okay, like any other din derabbanan. But says the Beis HaLevi, if your approach to Shemitah b'zman hazeh is that it really should have been deraisa, like the Rambam says. It's kayem es kedushas haaretz. Why is it derabbanan? Because it's a quirk. You know what the quirk is? Nebuch Shemitah depends on Yovel, and Yovel depends on Rov Yishvel Leha, and we don't have all the Aseres HaShvatim Agan, so we don't have Yovel, we don't have Shemitah, for a million Chagadja. By the way, therefore, Shemitah B'zman HaZeh is the Rabbanan. So the Beis HaLevi suggests when you have a Rabbanan like that, that's a very, very low level Rabbanan. It's a low level the other way. It really should be. It has all the makings, all the trimmings of Shemitah Deraisa, and then at the last second we pull the wolf out and say, oh, no, sorry, you're missing that condition. So says the Beis HaLevi, if you go ahead and observe Shemitah, that's a Kiyum Deraisa Shemitah. So this is a fascinating discussion. We've quoted about this in the past. As the Sman, the Chazanish, does the weather cooperate? Does the ground cooperate to Shemitah Derabbanan? The Torah promises that you keep Shemitah, you're going to have Gevaldige Brachas, it's going to be amazing Brachas, all the part of the Tzvisi, the Shlosh Hashanim. So the sman for shemish for rice, yeah, that's for shemitah deraisa, not for shemitah b'zman hazeh. Gotta do it at your own, observe at your own loss. You know, no one promises you anything. And the chaznish says, no, Kadosh Baruch Hu promises us for shemitah derabbanan also. So the chora, this depends on this base of life. I mean, am I really doing what Kadosh Baruch Hu wants? Is this really v'tzivisis b'chos? Is this really the mitzvah of shemitah? So if you hold that shemitah b'zman hazeh is derabbanan because it's chutz labretz, it's the make believe. It's not shemitah. It's not derabbanan. I get tzchar for the rabbanans, but lav dafka Kadosh Baruch Hu promises me 3 years of crops. But if you hold it to Beis HaLevi, that you're not mechuyev to do Shemitah b'zman hazeh. But if you do it, so it's tofes, it's chal. This is a kiyum of Shemitah on a level of the Araisa. Maybe not b'toras chiyum, b'toras kiyum. This is a meaningful Shemitah on a level of the Araisa, and therefore maybe you get brachas of 3 years crops. So this would put Shemitah b'zman hazeh up a little bit, up the ante a little bit in terms of Shemitah. Then the Beis HaLevi throws another curveball at us in terms of what our approach to Shemitah b'zman hazeh should be. Look at it through the eyes of leniency or the eyes of stringency. There are psukim in the end of Sefer Nehemiah, that was Sefer Ezra. I'm also seeing Sefer Nehemiah, but in Kisvei Kodesh, it's Sefer Ezra. So at the end of that Sefer, so it refers to the fact that when the Jewish people came back at the beginning of Bayi Sheni, so there was a little bit of rifyon, a little bit, people weren't so up to par in terms of some of the areas of Shemitah mitzvahs. And there was a grandiose precious bris that was agreed upon with the Kodesh Baruch Hu in Klal Yisrael. And they promised, they made the following promise. They signed off, and all the psukim describe in great detail. They agreed they're going to be more makbid in Shemir Shabbos, more makbid on this, more makbid on that. And it gives a whole list of different areas of actual Shemiras and mitzvahs that they decided that they were going to be makbid on. And it says in those psukim, they accepted upon themselves they're going to be more careful about Shemitah. They can observe the dinim of Trumas and Maisa, they can observe the dinim of Bikurim, and they observe, it says explicitly, they're going to keep the dinim of Shemitah Kedas Uchadin. So the question is that promise. They promised that they're going to keep Shemitah. So what does that mean exactly? Promise they're going to keep Shemitah. Is there anything binding to that promise? So the Beis HaLevi says, well, Shemitah would be deraisa. There's nothing really binding. Mushpub Yom HaSinai. If you promised, put on tefillin, you promised to keep Shabbos, that doesn't really mean anything. So then that promise didn't really mean anything. It was just a musar. It was a divichizah kind of a promise. But if they weren't really chayiv min haTorah, and now they promised to observe Shemitah, then that promise becomes binding. And it takes on the category, it's called the Shavuos HaTzibur, Kabbalas HaTzibur. When the entire Jewish people accepts upon themselves to do something that they're not technically chayiv to do, that's a whole new area of halacha. We spoke about this many times in the past. According to many opinions, that's why we will chur tavish v'nesir mayr b'zman hazeh. Although technically tfilos avish v'shus, but the klais for nimu v'gom, they accept, they promise to daven mayr. Or we fast tainis tibus, beside tishbuk, we fast kabbalas haTzibur. So that notion of kabbalas haTzibur is very, very meaningful in halacha. According to many, it may be a shalos of deraisas, it's a shavuos haTzibur, it's like maybe b'chlala, chlaluchas nadar v'shavuos. So the Beis Halevi writes that Shemitah was not just Tam. I did the Rabbanan some days in it, sometime in history, decided to get together and make up Shemitah the Rabbanan. No, Chaisel swore to it. They signed on the dotted line. They were kabbalah upon themselves, Beleit Shalom, that they can observe Shemitah. So we are bound by that Kabbalah Satzibur of 2,500 years ago, back to the days of Ezra Nehemiah. So that throws a whole other monkey wrench into Shemitah. So the Beis Halevi discovered Psukim in Sefer Ezra, that they add a little bit of a kinech to Shemitah. The bottom line is that there really are two different sets of eyes to how you look at Shemitah Bizman Hazeh. If you look at Shemitah through the eyes of somewhat lenient, the Rabbanans, and therefore maybe there's more room to finagle, or do you look through Adam finagle in a bad way, I'm saying to maneuver halachically, or do you look through Shemitah through the eyes of either a real deraisa, like some Rishonim say, or at least through the eyes of a quasi deraisa, or a kabbal satima there, something like that, which would lead us to some more chumradik conclusions in the Shemitah. Even if you take the chumradik version of the Shemitah, so ad kedekach, it doesn't mean as follows. Moshe finds it in his famous tshuva we spoke about the Esrog HaShviyas a couple of weeks ago. So Moshe quotes that there were those who prohibited the Esrog HaShviyas, which, okay, we understood that discussion a few weeks ago. It's not really too relevant for us, Bezman Hazeh. We do lots of basins today. But B'shaito, back in the 1950s, there were some Gedolei Poskim in America who refused to use the Esrog HaShviyas because they felt there were violations of Minhag Shumah and Evod, etc. So one of the Poskim who was discussing that Shaila, so he said as follows. He said that if a person is going to be a mezalzel in the dinim of Shemitah, they're going to buy and sell the Esrogim b'Isser, and they're going to use the money b'Isser, and somebody is assuming it's Shemitah. So Shemitah is like Shabbos, as Allah like Shabbos. The Shabbos like Shabbos Lashem. The quote from the Panamish Rashi used to wish good Shabbos to all the trees during the Shnas Shemitah. It's Shabbos Lashem. So he said, if a person is Machal Sa Shabbos, it's like a Mumul Chol Tarakula. If a person is not observing Shemitah, it's like a Mumul Chol Tarakula. That's what one of the poskim in America wrote back in the 1950s. So Rabbi Moshe wrote, the Mechilas covered with that Pesach, it's against the Mishnah, it's against the Gemara, that's the Sugya. It's clear, the Gemara says, Masechet Gittin, in the Sugya of who's Choshen or what, that Shemitah is like Shabbos, but you don't become a Mumul Chotah. If you're Mezalzel in Shemitah, you don't trade up wine. There's no such thing. It's Bechlal not true. There is no such halacha. So he said that particular Pesach was got so to hits about Shemitah, so he went a little bit too much. He said, it's Choshen not true. It's against Chazal. So yes, Shemitah is a serious area of halacha, no question about it, but not Shemesh, not Shemesh. It's, you know, Shavsat Shabbos Hashem, but still, there's a big difference between driving your car and selling an apple in Shemitah. There's a big, big, huge difference between the two. So again, like in all areas of halacha, we have to be careful. We don't want to be mezalzel in halacha. The other thing, we don't want to put things too much more than they really are. So Shemitah is an important area, whether according to most, only the Rabbanan, the Loder, the Hydra, whatever it is. And again, there are those poskim who are making on certain coolers that maybe we don't want to necessarily rely on, especially those in America. We don't have to rely on certain coolers. Some people in Eretz Yisrael feel they're more pressured. Okay, in America, for us to start relying on coolers that we are not so comfortable with, that are maybe not the opinion of Rova Poskim, for us, for an apple here, for a carrot here, for a pepper there, so it's probably not the best idea to rely on some of these coolers. But again, the coolers do exist. Some poskim did accept them, and others didn't, and even within those who didn't accept them, there are other eitzes and other suggestions that so we'll make a siyum on none. You can't say the whole chashmita, but at least in this very, very small portion that we were zeichet learn together. Let's see, after Pesach, so we'll start the next topic. Next week we are not going to have the shiur. My gut feeling is that in 2 weeks from now, Sunday morning, probably won't have also, depending on who's still unpacking the Pesach dish, but to be determined. We'll let you know when that Sunday morning there'll be a shiur or not, depending on what people's travel schedule are.